All right, I wanted to talk a little bit about sanctifying or purifying, basically getting ready to approach God. So I got the little graphic up on the screen there, picture. 1993 years ago, Jesus was abandoned, betrayed, let down by his closest friends, his followers, and most of his family. Not all, but almost everyone. It makes me think of the times that I've let him down. We're all as guilty as the disciples, each and every one of us. Judas, the 120 that quit and left, said, "Oh, this is too much. We're highly offended, and we're not going to go with this." Just as guilty as the Romans that drove the nails and the Pharisees who hated and plotted against them and arranged things so that he could be put to death. We not only did this to him, but we do it to each other sometimes. And when it happens, it's when we need each other the most. We're up in this lodge in the mountains, a beautiful place. Probably one of the nicer places that we've been that, you know, the lodge in Gatlinburg that we were a couple years ago, that was really nice, but it was small, too. We wouldn't fit in there now. We're now, everybody's observing the days of unleavened bread. And so let me ask you a question. Just think about this in the back of your mind. Are you prepared? Is there something that you should be doing or something that you should have done before you came up here? What is your priority? Different people have different priorities that are here. In general terms, we're all here to worship God, but each one of us got individual needs, desires, wants, priorities. We list them in our minds and we hope to accomplish certain things. Where is this on your list? And this is just things that I'm just thinking about for myself this morning. You know, where is this on the list of things? Because I didn't know for sure what I was going to talk about until I woke up this morning and looked at the phone and saw what time it was and said, another 30 minutes will be just fine. So I reset it. I said I wasn't going to be up till 2 o'clock. I wasn't. I was only 1:30, so I did an improvement. Hopefully it'll be a bigger improvement tonight. But where is this on the list? Because this is something literally that all of us need to think about. What are we focused on? What are we going to focus on while we're up here? And does it even matter? You know, is somebody thinking, well, I wonder how long that bozo is going to talk because, you know, I'm starting to get hungry and it's, you know, it's almost 12 o'clock. It's not real long. It's fairly short. It's less than 37 pages and about an hour and a half per page. So. But anyway, we're up here. What are we doing? What do we want to accomplish? What do we need? Because we all have needs and wants and desires. What is it that we need the most? Let's take a look at John chapter 11, verse 55. And this is like the gateway into what I want to talk about. It says, "And the Passover of the Jews was near, and many went up from the country to Jerusalem before the Passover to purify themselves." Well, wait a minute. Before Passover even started, they went up to Jerusalem, and there was a purpose for them getting... Yeah, everybody wanted to be there. You know, it's one of the commands, three times a year. But there was a purpose for them to get there early. And that's what I want to talk about just a little bit today. It's all Greek to me, but hagnizo is to make clean, to sanctify, ceremonially or morally or both, really both. But there was something physical that they did when they went up there. And I thought, well, I was reading that verse this morning, and I thought, somebody's got to have said something on this. So I did a quick search, and I didn't find anything that I could plagiarize, you know. So I thought, okay, maybe I shouldn't have slept that extra half hour, because I got to do a little work here. But what are we doing, or are we doing this ourselves? And don't worry, you're up here and you say, dang, I didn't even know I was supposed to do that. What were they? This is New Testament, right? I mean, it was in John. And don't worry, it's not too late. Remember it for next year. Remember it for Pentecost. Remember it for trumpets, atonement, tabernacles. But I want to show you a few things today on this subject. There's a physical defilement that keeps people from observing Passover. We know that's why there's a second Passover, okay? But it's not only physical. It's spiritual too. And you can decide for yourself, but oftentimes the spiritual is more important than the physical. They're both important, and one doesn't undo the other one. Don't misunderstand what I'm saying here. But it's something that I think a lot of people just ignore. I know I've ignored it in the past. And let's take a look in an example that gives us in 2 Chronicles chapter 30, verse 17. It says, for there were many in the assembly who had not sanctified themselves. So in other words, they hadn't done this. They hadn't got right with God, I guess is an easier, more modern way of putting it, something that people use. And even though they use that phrase, and they don't really know what that means or how you'd even begin to do it. It's sort of like, are you a believer? Well, everybody believes in something. Some trees and the earth and snakes and cows. And, you know, so it's kind of a loaded question. But they had not sanctified themselves. Therefore, the Levites had charge of the slaughter of the Passover lambs. So here it is, it's Passover time, but they hadn't done this physical thing yet, right? For everyone who is not clean, to sanctify them to the Lord. Now, let me take just a little bit of a break here. I'm going to continue on. But a lot of people, there's a built-in prejudice, maybe, or at the least, for the majority of people, they're not interested in a lot of things that was done, especially when it gets down to purification and being ritually impure and a lot of misunderstanding on that subject also. You know, like 25 years ago when Mary and I were looking at all of this stuff, and some people, you know, you talk and just, what have you been doing? And not even getting into it or pulling out a Bible or looking, whatever. And she told me, she says, well, half the church are women. And, you know, they're not, you start talking about ritual impurity as if that's something that is automatically like a sin. You know, what did God tells a man and a woman when they're married to go out, be fruitful and multiply. But you realize when you're doing that, you're ritually impure. You know, you got to wash until evening. It's a good thing. But it's not like a sin. So people don't understand the whole concept of impurity, really. The first, depending on if it's a boy or a girl, when a woman has a baby, the first few days she's ritually impure. She just had a baby. It's a wonderful thing. It's not a sin. It's not. So We got to get past this preconceived ideas that we all have and understand that first there's a reason for it. Sometimes the reason is something physical, you know, but also there's something else that goes with it. But not everything makes you a sinner. But there are some things that God says, you know, okay, here's what I just thought of. The kids come in from outside, they've been playing in the mud. And the parents look at them and say, go! And they come running into the kitchen and sit down at the table and start reaching for the food. Mom and Dad says, hey, go wash your hands! The kids aren't clean to come into the kitchen and start messing with food in front of everything else. They want them there. They made it so that the kids could come in, but it's like, hey, go take care of some minor little issue here. Clean yourself up a little bit and then come back in and eat. And so there are things like that that God says for us. It's not the kids weren't sinning. They were having a good time. They were having fun. But there's things that God said, if you're going to approach me, you need to do some of these things. And we just, you know, somebody said, we were talking about the name of the song, you know. I'll get off into all of that, one of the songs we sing. But anyway, so the people had not purified or sanctified themselves. So continuing on, 2 Chronicles 30, verse 18. For a multitude of the people, many from Ephraim, Manasseh, Issachar, and Zebulun, had not cleansed themselves, yet they ate the Passover contrary to what was written. So here's a large group of people. They weren't supposed to be doing this, but yet they did it. And others knew that they had done it. So why is this story in here? That's what I got to think about this morning. What are we supposed to learn from this? Because there's no filler material in the Bible. It's not like God says, I need another 476 words to balance this out. You know, everything's in there for a reason. Now, the vast majority of it, we might not have figured it out or can't figure it. In 10 lifetimes, you will never figure it out. But it's in here for a reason. So technically, my point is technically, they violated some of God's laws. They were eating Passover and they shouldn't have. So let's go on. It says, but Hezekiah prayed for them, saying, may the good Lord provide atonement for everyone. And then there's a caveat in this, verse 19, who prepares his heart to seek God. So here why I say sometimes the spiritual is more important than the physical. It doesn't give you a reason to ignore, an excuse to ignore the physical. But Hezekiah asked God basically to forgive the people that were doing something because of something physical, but they had their hearts, their minds, their love for God, the wanting to do this, the wanting to participate in this. Forgive them. I'm going to read again, 19. Who prepares his heart to seek God, the Lord God of his fathers, though he is not cleansed according to the purification of the sanctuary. I got to admit, I was just a couple minutes into this, and because of the Seventh-day Adventist background and their doctrine of the purifying the sanctuary, which is a bunch of hogwash the way they go at it, I almost didn't say, do I really want to get into this? What is the purification of the sanctuary? What is that? How does that happen? The only guy that was allowed in there was the high priest. So how did they purify the sanctuary? But there was something that they were supposed to do according to the purification of the sanctuary. They hadn't done it. They went ahead and were going to eat the Passover anyhow. And Hezekiah prayed and asked God, look at your hearts. Look what's really in their heart. And the Lord listened to Hezekiah and healed the people. Now, I don't know, I didn't have time to look up what the other translations say, but it's all going to be some variation of that. He healed them. There was something physically not right, and their hearts were right, their minds were right, their desires were right, their wants, their motivations were right, and God healed them because of it. So that's what I want to talk about. We got an example of a large group of people that had not physically been sanctified. They didn't do it. There was something they could have done. See, here's the difference. They could have done this, but they did not. It was too late. Now, there wasn't time for whatever reasons, and they were ritually not able to observe Passover, but their hearts were clean. Now, guess what? Every single person on the face of the earth ritually cannot do it. We're all ritually impure. Anybody ever had the sprinkling, the ashes of the red heifer mixed in with water and sprinkled on you to be cleansed, ritually cleansed? No? Every day I don't want to pick anybody up. But you go someplace that's ritually impure, and you're ceremonially unclean, and you're defiled. What can do that? Anybody ever been to a graveyard? Anybody ever been to a funeral home? Anybody ever touched a dead person? Anybody ever... There's this long litany, and that's what people all want to ignore. We said, well, what are we going to do anyhow about it? What difference does it make? There's no priest. How are you going to do this? I thought I turned that off. I did the ringer way down. Let me turn it off. Sorry. All right. We are all in the same shape as the people there. Nobody is able physically to become ceremonially unclean, and we all are unclean today. So does this have some application possibly? Is there something that maybe each and every one of us, instead of saying, I don't like what that says, and I don't like the laws, and I don't need them, blah, 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 blah. I can't see it. Well, you could if you open them up. What did they do? And what difference did it make? And is there something we can learn from that and apply to ourselves today? And from here on out? Because physically, until he returns, there's nothing you can do. Let's take a look at the sanctuary that does exist right now and existed then. Let's take a look at Hebrews chapter 9, verse 18. Because this existed then when this was written in Chronicles, and it exists today. Okay? It says, therefore, not even the first covenant was dedicated without blood, for when Moses had spoken every precept to all of the people according to the law. So here's some insight to everybody. He didn't just say, here's the law, here's from God. You know, if you look, anybody that's ever read through Psalms 119, you can't, anyhow, I can't not read it and understand about how much David loved the commandments, the statutes, the judgments, the ordinances, and over and over, the precepts. In other words, what's the precept? The intent behind it. If you kill your brother, you violated one of the commandments. You've committed murder if you murder him. But if you hate them in your heart to the point you want them dead, you're just as good. That's a precept that has to deal with that commandment. So here, For Moses has spoken every precept to the people according to the law. It's not enough just to memorize, you know, well, there's 613 commandments or 750 some, depending on how you count them. And, you know, I can spot them out verbatim. Number one, number two, number three. That's not enough. Ever have somebody that can just quote the Bible, they've got it memorized, certain verses and whatever, and they just spit it out, but they don't have a concept of what that means? They can say the words, but they don't understand what the precepts behind the words. You think he did this just because they were killing time for 40 years out in the wilderness? They didn't have nothing better to do? No, Moses tried to explain and tried to teach the people. But so often, they don't want to hear the literal words, much less the precepts behind the words. And sadly, that's the shape that most of the world is in, that claims that they've got a Savior, claims that they're a believer. So according to the law, he took the blood of calves and goats with water, scarlet wool and hyssop, and sprinkled both the book itself and all the people, saying, "This is the blood of the covenant which God has commanded you." So now we're talking about a covenant. And he's telling them the precepts behind all of the instructions. And then, you know, if I started, and I wouldn't do this because, you know, it would be wrong for me to do it. But if I started walking through and I said, "Hey, we got some chicken back there. Let's take some of the blood and we'll mix it in with some water. We'll take some hyssop in that." And I'd start walking around the room and "Well, hey, what are you doing here? Are you crazy? I'm never coming. I'm highly offended and I'm never coming back here again." And before people got down to the main road down there off top of the mountain, they'd be burning up their phones saying, "You'll never believe what just happened." You know, but this is something that Moses did for the people. So I'm going to sprinkle it, mix it up a little bit, and sprinkle it on you spiritually, thinking maybe, you know, let's talk about some of these precepts. Let's talk about some of these things that go behind here. Get out of our little comfort zone box where we've got everything figured out and we got our ritual set in stone and we've done this over and over and over and over and we know just what we're going to do, because we never stop learning. We never stop growing. And I'm not presenting something, you know, this is old stuff. You know, seek the ancient past, the ancient ways, and there you'll find rest for your soul. That type of thing, okay? Things that we just have gone by the wayside. Like when Israel came out of Egypt, first thing he had to do was teach them what day the Sabbath was. They didn't even know. What's the best way to teach them? Their guts. That'll get their attention. But back to this. Verse 20, saying, "This is the blood of the covenant which God has commanded you. Then likewise he sprinkled with blood both the tabernacle and the vessels of the ministry. And according to the law, almost all things were purified. Almost all things are purified with blood, and without the shedding of blood there is no remission. Therefore it was necessary that the copies of things in the heavens should be purified with these, but the heavenly things themselves with better sacrifices than these." So, you catch that? Everyone catch that? The copies of things in heaven. What's it talking about? Physically, what's it talking about here? Anybody? It's talking about the tabernacle and all of the things, and it says that they are copies of what's in heaven. When people picture, you know, wonder what they know, well, God's throne is up in heaven. Do you really picture the things that are, where did Moses get this? Now, God could have just put an image in his mind and said, "Tell them to go build this. You make sure that they're following the pattern." He gave him a vision, and he showed him what was in heaven so he knew what to build on earth. Do we really think about that? Now, I'm not saying they're killing animals up in heaven. Don't misunderstand what I'm saying. But those things that they built on earth for the priest and the high priest and everything was a copy of what was in heaven where God's throne is. It wasn't some, I don't know what the most people think, you know, something that they, a bunch of men just dreamed up and built and made some kind of ritual. And no, it was very specific. And a lot of you know John McCrae, unfortunately, you know, he's no longer here. He died a few years ago, but he was a master jeweler. And he said, when you go through the Bible, you know, he would design, create, make custom jewelry, do all kinds of stuff. He says, there is not enough information in the Bible. There's no way, much less everything, that even one thing, he could take that and recreate that. Because it's not, the instructions aren't there. See, so he had to show Moses, so Moses could tell the artisans, and, you know, here's what it needs to be. Here's how it's got to be made. Here's how, and then watch, and yep, that's it. That's exactly what we need. Or no, that's it. You got to change this. You got to change that. It's a copy. So, but the interesting part, verse 23, therefore it was necessary that the copies of things in heaven should be purified with these. So there is a little bit to this purification thing, and it's talking about in heaven. But the heavenly things themselves with better sacrifices than these. So it's saying the things on the earth, you had the blood of animals. But the things in heaven required a better purification, a higher, something of more value. That's what it's really talking about. It's got to be something greater than just animals. That's not enough to purify what's in heaven. Verse 24, for Christ has not entered the Holy of Holies made with hands, which are copies of the true, but into heaven itself, now to appear in the presence of God for us. So, you know, Jesus never, when he was a human being anyhow, never went into the Holy of Holies, and at that point, the temple. But he is in the Holy of Holies in heaven today. So he didn't go into the copies, but he went into the original. And that's the point of what this is bringing up. And going back to this, the purification of the sanctuary and the prayers from Hezekiah to heal the people. So let's go on in this. Second Chronicles 30, and I put this statement up here so that everybody could read it. You know, that's not Bible verse. That's it's not the book of Mark chapter 97, verse 6, okay? It's a statement that I'm making. It tells us that people that are not purified physically for some reason, a.k.a. every single one of us, but spiritually are pure in their hearts, we can be purified with prayers in the heavenly sanctuary. So there's hope for us. But it's something that has to be done. If we don't do it, we're just as guilty as somebody with the physical that was just going to do it on their own. And they don't even care enough about wanting to make it right or whatever it is that's got them ritually impure that they just don't care. So we say, well, there's nothing we can do, so I just don't care. Well, guess what? Something's wrong here. This is not good. It's important today because not one of us, like I said earlier, is physically purified or physically able to do Passover because we've got some kind of physical impurity. There's only one way that we can do it. So is it applicable today for us? Well, let's take a look. Gives you a little background of what's going on here, what we're going to read next. In 1 Corinthians 11:26, I submit to you that it's a life or death thing. It's a, even if you don't just fall over dead right away, it's a life of suffering, pain, that we can pull down on ourselves because of what's in our hearts and what's in our minds. 1 Corinthians 11:26 says, "For as often as you eat this bread and drink this cup, you proclaim the Lord's death till he comes. Therefore, whoever eats this bread or drinks this cup of the Lord in an unworthy manner..." Whoever, you read this, every Passover it talks about this, "will be guilty of the blood, body and the blood of the Lord, but let a man examine himself." So here Paul's telling us this is something we got to do. Let a man examine himself, and so let him eat the bread and drink the cup, for he who eats and drinks in an unworthy manner eats and drinks judgment to himself. You think that was only 1990 some years ago? Or you think that's today too? Verse 29, "For who eats and drinks in an unworthy manner eats and drinks judgment to himself, not discerning the Lord's body. For this reason, many are weak and sick among you, and many asleep." In other words, dead. "For if we would judge ourselves, we would not be judged. But when we are judged, we are chastened by the Lord, that we may not be condemned with the world." Now, a lot of people understand this, and in their own minds, they think, "Well, okay, Lord, please forgive me for all my sins and everything I've done." And then they're ready to go do Passover. Well, that's a good start. But if you really want to know the truth, that's like a man that beats his wife every single night, comes home drunk and beats her up, and he starts to clean his act up, and pretty soon he's only beating her up 4 or 5 nights a week. Well, that's better than 7, but that's still not acceptable. Okay? Something's still major wrong. So maybe it's just because I'm weird, or I know I'm weird, but rather than in our own minds what this means, why don't we look at what God says that they were supposed to do? Because there is a way spiritually to get past that impediment, and I believe that's why it's in the Bible. Because physically they could go do it, but there's so many things that happen that aren't in the Bible, but this one is. Now, physically, we can't go do something about it, but there's hope in there. There's a way in there for all of us to be able to do this. And it tells us what the key was. We can't forget about some of the physical things and just say, "Well, I just wash this clean of everything." So, without a temple, without a priesthood, without blood from the animals and everything else, and I already talked about this, not in the sermon, but a little bit up here. People say, without blood from the animals, what are we going to do today? And people say, "Well, we don't have to worry about any of that." Let me make this one very big, to my head anyhow, point. If anybody thinks that the blood isn't important and the laws on sacrifice aren't enforced today, you got a major problem. Here's why I say that. If I was going to ask anybody, say, "Why shouldn't you be thrown in the lake of fire? Why don't you deserve death?" Any believer is going to say, "Because Jesus died for my sins." Automatic, without even thinking. Oh, so there was still a requirement of this sacrifice, this blood for sin concept. It's still in effect today. Because he didn't die for some people 2,000 years ago. He died for you today. So when you say he paid the penalty for my sins and you point to him, it's his blood, you're saying, "Oh, well, that's one." The law requiring sacrifice for sin is still in effect today. Now, the only way you can do that today is through his sacrifice. You can't go out and say, well, you know, hey, Frank, will you sell me one of your cows? You know, I got a lot of sin. I need a whole cow just to, you know. Well, can't you buy a goat or something in Tennessee? You know, can't you get some chickens, turtle doves, whatever? Nah, I need a bull. You can't do that. Can't make an altar out of stone into your backyard and kill the animal and sacrifice. First, we're not the right lineage, and part of it would be violating the law, because part of the law is it's very specific what you have to do with the sacrifice, where it has to be brought before, you know, the gate. So you can't, in other words, you can't do one sin to keep something else that it says to do. One, you know, two wrongs don't make a right, that type of concept. But it is the only way we can do this today. So in Hebrews chapter 9, verse 13, it says, "For if the blood of bulls and goats and the ashes of a heifer sprinkling the unclean sanctifies for the purifying of the flesh, how much more shall the blood of Christ, who through the eternal Spirit offered himself without spot to God, cleanse your conscience from the dead works to serve the living God? And for this reason, he is the mediator of the new covenant by means of death, for the redemption of the transgressions under the first covenant, that those who are called may receive the promise of eternal inheritance." So it's only through him. You know, very interesting to me how people think, oh, Jesus is my high priest. And he is. But they have no clue what a high priest does. Well, have you ever studied that? Well, it's all that sacrifice stuff. It's all boring. It doesn't mean anything to me. Excuse me? Why is he the high priest? What's the role of the high priest? We all need to do this. James chapter 4, verse 7, it says, "Therefore, submit to God. Resist the devil and he'll flee from you. Draw near to God and he will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners. Purify your hearts, you double-minded. Lament and mourn and weep. Let your laughter be turned to mourning and your joy to gloom. Humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord and he will lift you up." Who is it we're supposed to submit to? Who is it that's going to lift us up? You know, we can come to God like a little child comes to his parents. Pure heart. You don't expect things from a little child than you do from a full-grown adult. But anybody that's ever, maybe women can relate and the men might still be clueless, but sometimes men do things and they look at their wife and say, "What's the matter with you? You know." "No, I really don't." But she knows that he did that on purpose. He doesn't have a clue. And finally, you know, you do something. You say, "Well, I'm sorry, honey. I shouldn't have done that." They still don't have a clue what they did, but they know they did something that they shouldn't have done. "Please forgive me. I'm sorry." Okay? But when the same thing, if they don't ever catch on, or do you know what mom's talking about? You know? If they never catch on at a certain point, it's like, now I know he's doing this on purpose. He's being what the Bible calls willingly ignorant. In case nobody knows what that willing, that means dumb on purpose. Okay? He's being dumb on purpose on this. He has the capability, the mental intellect. If he really loved me, he'd find out what it is that he's doing that really hurts me. And, you know, everybody is different with a different thing. Who are we all created in whose image? God. Some of the things that he feels when he talks about he gets angry and his wrath and his love and his compassion. Where do those traits, they all come from him? So it's not some like just some spiritual thing, and God, you know, there is branches of religion that think that these emotions and all of that, it talks about the right hand of God. Well, he doesn't really have hands, and, you know, and they put the branch to his nose, and, well, he doesn't really have a nose. Excuse me? We're created in his image, and so we get these feelings, these emotions, these desires, and everything as part of his creation that he gives to each one of us. So if we have the ability, like I said, little kid, they do things and you know they're pure and it doesn't matter, and you don't say, well, you're going to get a whoop. Come here and give me a hug, and I'm going to give you a whooping later for that. I'm going to teach you, boy. You're going to learn. But do you think it's possible that men, you know, when we have this ability, when we're willingly ignorant, when we're dumb on purpose, and we just don't want to look at it? Because we don't care? Now, if for the husband to have the attitude, get over it, woman. This is really nothing. I don't have to spend time figuring this out because you're being foolish here. The husband is wrong. If it matters to the wife, if it's important to her and you truly love her, you should figure it out. Or at least ask. Say, I can't figure it out. I'm clueless here. Tell me what it is so I can stop. Or tell me what I didn't do so I can do it. But at what point do each one of us, when we're willingly ignorant and stupid, and we say, well, it doesn't mean anything to me, maybe it means something to him. So maybe in our hearts, in our minds, we should elevate his wants and his desires just a little bit and put them above ours. Because I'll guarantee you that each and every one of us is doing something that he don't like, and we don't care enough to even figure it out. What kind of marriage is that? If the husband truly doesn't care enough to figure out what's really bothering his wife, how good is their marriage? How close? So how good is our relationship? How close are we really to God when all he is to us is a big sugar daddy in the sky? Give me this. Give me that. I need this. I need that. Help me here. Help me there. Get down on your knees and ask him sometime, how's your day going? Show me some of the things that I need to understand so that I can have a better relationship with you, because I love you more than anything. That's the first step of what all of us should do to get ready for Passover or any, the weekly Sabbath, any holy day of any kind. Now, Paul warns us about our attitude in 1 Corinthians 5:6. He says, I got a couple different translations here. New King James says, your glorying is not good. Do you not know that a little leaven leavens the whole lump? And in the NIV it says, your boasting is not good. Don't you know that a little yeast works through the whole batch of dough? I talked a little bit before, not today, but before, about yeast and how it does something than just other leavening agents, you know, sodium bicarbonate or something else. Yeast does something specific. It gets into the dough and it rots it. It changes it and ferments it. And the rising is caused by the fermentation of the dough and the bubbles and the air that's introduced while it's rotting and changing. It's no longer the same. And that's what sin does to us. It gets in us. It rots us from the inside and it changes us. And that's why yeast is the key. Sodium bicarbonate don't do that. But yeast, the spores or Fleischmann's, if you go out and buy it, you want a mega dose of it or whatever it is, you're forever changed. Now, we can ask God to forgive us. We can repent, and He forgives us. But that sin has still done some damage, and we're no longer the same because of it. And the glorying or boasting or however, that's not right. Are we too proud? Are we too self-centered to only worry about ourselves and not think about Him? In 1 Corinthians 5:7, it says, "Therefore, purge out the old leaven, that you may be a new lump, since you truly are unleavened. For indeed, Christ our Passover was sacrificed for us." So this whole process and this Passover, and it all plays a part of this. "Therefore, let us keep the feast not with old leaven, nor with the leaven of malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth." So, you know, it is the right thing to talk about this at this time and bring the analogy of sin and leavening and boasting. Because it started out with boasting and glorifying, you know, being full of yourself, ourselves, being puffed up, being selfish, where we want everything for us and we're not willing to do anything for Him. And to some extent, in different times of our lives, we kind of go up on one and down on the other, and you know, but it's still something, especially when it gets down to the holy days, that we need to think about. Part of that purifying of the sanctuary thing that I started with. Because what is your body? What is our body? Some say, well, that's, you know, okay, but that was something, a tabernacle out in the wilderness and the sanctuary up in heaven. Excuse me, but what is your body? Your physical body? Temple. The temple of God. Oh, so now all of a sudden, some of those instructions that apply to a physical tabernacle and later a temple or something spiritual, something that's still physical but it's up in heaven, now all of a sudden that applies to you. So I'll just ask a question. Anybody gone through and figured out what it's talking about and what are the things? And okay, here's some physical things. Why? Do these physical? Why? What's behind it? What's the reasoning? Passover represents the sinless lamb that bore the sins of the world. He gave His life, Jesus, Yeshua. The leavening represents all of our sins, mine, yours, and everybody else's. The days of unleavened bread represents putting this leavening or sin out of our lives. That's one of the things the churches have done a good job. They talk about leavening and sin and get rid of it and put it out. And even with that, there's some physical things behind it. It's good. There's some physical healing aspects of doing it. Anybody that's ever had Candida albicans, all kinds of problems with their, and it's men and women. It's not just women, it's men. A lot of men have a problem. You know, one of the things you can do is you get rid of the yeast and you put that out, you do a physical purging of your body, and it's got some health aspects. So he's got a plan where all of us are going to do this at least once a year. We're going to get rid of all of this. And then hopefully we'll make the connection with sin and put that together and say we get rid of it. And then, you know, first thing that happens is the days of unleavened bread is over. And people get pulled out of wherever they've been and say, oh, okay, I'm just dying for a sandwich. Oh, let's stop on the way home or wherever we're going. Let's, you know, and there's nothing wrong. It's over. There's 7 days of unleavened bread, not eight. Not six, not ten, there's seven. But maybe there's something when we realize, oh, we just can't wait to get that physical leavening back in. Hey, we better be careful with the spiritual too. Don't go back to what you were doing before you got up here or wherever you're going. Don't be so fast to go back to doing everything wrong the way we were doing it before. If we burn and throw the physical leaven out, and we do a really good job and we make sure we got it all, but we fail to concentrate on the spiritual, you know what? The physical is easier than the spiritual. That's the easy part. Just like for the kids. You can get the kids involved. You can get the kids to help. And as soon as they can get old enough, they can start reading. You say, hey, look at these labels. You know, start reading. Or if they don't know what the words mean, just say, well, read it aloud to me so I can hear. You know, they can help with the physical, but it takes a higher level of maturity to do the spiritual. That's where the real work is. And I propose to you that the physical is important. I'm not thinking anybody should say, oh, you know what? This is just too much. I don't feel like it. We're going to just ignore it. You know. You open the freezer, you look at it, and you say, You're a pot roast. Shut the door and walk away. All the leavening's gone. We need to do the physical, but we can't neglect the spiritual. All right, let's take a look at Galatians chapter 5, verse 9. It says, now the works of the flesh are evident, which are adultery, fornication, uncleanliness, lewdness, idolatry, sorcery, hatred, contentions, jealousies, outbursts of wrath, selfish ambitions, dissension, heresy, envy, murders, drunkenness, revelries, and the like. Of which I tell you beforehand, just as I told you in time past, that those who practice such things will not inherit the kingdom of God. So there's physical things that you can do that it's talking about that's going to keep you out of God's kingdom. But if you are to do the physical, it requires a certain amount of sickness. Mental sickness, spiritual sickness, before you'd even consider doing the physical. Some things are done in ignorance. We don't know. But some of these things on the list, even if you stop, say, well, there's one. I'm going to stop doing that one. And we don't address why we were doing it and why we were having pleasure or why we had these desires or why we just didn't care and we did it anyhow. There's still something wrong there. It's like having something wrong with you. You go to the doctor, he gives you a pill, and he suppresses your symptom, but the problem is still there, but the symptom's gone, and everybody thinks they're doing fine. Oh, the blood pressure came down, the blood sugar came down, cholesterol is down, whatever it is. Excuse me, but the problem's still there. You just hid the symptom. Well, just taking something on that list and crossing it out, the problem's still there, we just hid a symptom. Let me ask you a question. What month was the tabernacle in the wilderness? What month was that dedicated in?
Second month of the second year.
First month is when? Nisan, Aviv. That's about Passover time, right? Isn't there a story in there? And I've heard all kinds of analogies, and I don't know what part of anything. But didn't Aaron have two sons?
Four sons.
Well, two sons, though, that
offered unclean fire.
Strange fire.
They have
a bio. Isn't that like they were getting everything ready, and then here comes Passover? Preparation. And they bring something strange in that is outside of what God said. Violate what he said so that they can do it their way. After a while, that's why right after that it talks about alcohol and maybe they were drunk. And I don't know what all is going on. But the bottom line is God was really specific and he said, do this way. And they wanted to do it their way. And here, all of us, I don't care who you are, we're all guilty of it. God says, do this like this. He gives us a lot of freedom. I don't know everybody what you're doing, but in Knoxville, we meet at 2:30 in the afternoon. When I first moved to Tennessee in 86 or whatever it was, I thought, well, this is kind of strange. Church is always Saturday morning. And then once I started going there, and I said, hey, this is kind of cool. I get to sleep in this day. I don't have to go to work, so I can lay around in bed and relax and rest. And then after the minister died, I realized that this is really good because I can put a message together. I got time to do it. I don't have to stay up really late Friday nights after Bible study. But we got freedom. Does he say on the seventh day of the week in the fourth hour? 10 o'clock in the morning? This is when you shall gather and worship before me. No. You want to do it Friday night, Saturday morning, Saturday afternoon. It's okay as long as you do it. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. That's the command. So there's a lot of things he gives us freedoms. But not everything. It's not all a free-for-all. So all I'm asking everybody is just to think a little bit, and it's none of my business what you do. It's between you and God. But I'm saying, go have a conversation with him and ask him what you should, because what you should be doing is probably something we all have weeks and faults and things that we're dealing with. It's different than somebody else. Anger, pride, gossip destroys all of our lives. This is the precept behind some of these physical laws. It's the precept part. If people want to do away with the physical or ignore the physical, and when you do that, what happens to the precept? It goes away too. Who cares? Don't even know the physical. So what difference does the precept make? Go back and read Psalm 119. When Cain's offering was not accepted, Genesis 4, he got angry and he caused them physically to do something very wrong. Killed his brother. Remember Nahum? Because of his pride, he almost wasn't cured of his leprosy. Because of his pride. Is there something going on in our lives? Our prides? Killing that for us? Something we really need? Doesn't have to be a physical, medical thing. Could be anything. It was hatred that destroyed Haman and Esther. His own hatred did him in. So I'm almost done, but that's why I want to look at this. Matthew 5:23. Therefore, if you bring your gift to the altar and remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go your way. First, be reconciled to your brother and then come and offer your gift. In other words, a simple way to put this, remember, if you have something against your brother, go and make it right. That's what it says, right? No. In other words, maybe you could be at fault, and that's why your brother's got something against you. But maybe you're not. You're innocent. Go and make it. Now, maybe you go to your brother, and he says, get off my property, that don't ever come back. That can happen. But we have to make the effort ourselves first. Now, if we're supposed to do this on this precept about hating someone in your heart, what about all the other stuff? Even if we're innocent, we got to make the effort. No matter what the subject is, no matter what the law is, no matter what the instruction is, we have to make the effort. Now, do we know them all? Do we have them memorized? Can we? And even if we got memorization, do we understand what that even means, the concepts behind it? There's a big part in the laws of this country. I know that's another thing that people don't much care about, even though we're all affected by it. Anybody drive here? You had to obey over 2,000 traffic laws to get here. And if you would have violated any one of those in front of a cop, the lights would have come on, he would have pulled you over and given you a ticket, a penalty for violating the laws. Now, I couldn't quote without really thinking know, I could quote maybe 10, maybe 15. We could all sit down, if we got started bouncing things off, we could come up with 20, 30, 40. Who can come up with 2,000? I don't think so. We'd have to get some books out and crack them open and start reading and looking it up. But we were all held accountable to every single one, because like I said, violate one. And if that cop knows one of them that you violate in front of them, guess what happens? Here comes the penalty. So it's the same thing with God's laws. We don't have them all memorized. We don't understand, even if we know that it exists, most of them. And he doesn't expect us to be perfect in everything, okay? But they are still there. And they're created for a reason. And even in our laws, physical laws in this country, you know what's the, when, what the judge is supposed to do is he's supposed to rule in a case based off of the law. But what if the law is kind of, yeah, what do they really mean? You know what comes into play in interpreting that law? I think Arthur knows this. The intent of the law giver. The lawmaker, if it's a legislative body. The lawgiver, if it's God. The intent is the governing factor. If something's not crystal clear, here's something that ain't, you know, people say, is pornography a sin? Well, let me see. Yeah, that's in 2 Nebuchadnezzar chapter 4, verse 5. There was pornography on the internet. There's no thing, such thing as pornography on the internet. So you're not going to find it in the Bible. But what's the intent of the law giver, the law maker? You have to go to that to answer that question. So one of the things with every one of God's instructions is, what's he doing? What's he trying to come? What are we supposed to learn from this? What's his intent? Why are we, and guess what? We're never going to get it all and get it all right until Jesus returns, but that's what we should be doing. I'll give you one example, and then I'm going to finish here. I had a really, and I've talked about this before, but I'm thinking maybe there's somebody else out there like this. I had a really bad attitude with God's laws. I really did. There were some I did not like. I had a problem with it. Some of them were minor. Some of them were... But the one I probably had the biggest problem with had to do with part of the impurity laws, and it involved my wife. And I literally said, I was praying in one, and I told him, I said, I don't understand this. This is dumb. You're going to have to explain this to me if you expect me to do this. There's no physical reason that I can see or think of or, you know. That was wrong. You know, I'm lucky that he's not me. To say, oh, I'm going to show you how. Take that. But luckily, he had mercy on me. Okay? And so, because of, for whatever reason, he chose to answer that prayer. And he showed me some physical reasons why he said that. Some medical things. And I mean, it wasn't easy. I went all over the place. We went down to the Chabad house and talked to some of the rabbis there and made an appointment. And they said, oh, we don't do that today. You know, that's the... Some women take some things on themselves, but you know, the men don't do this, and you know, we're all unclean anyhow. And I went to Brooklyn, New York, 4 or 5 times, and the Lubavitchers and Hasidics, and they're more, you know, to a bad way, even with Kabbalah and all kinds of nonsense and evil like that. I thought, well, they're into more spiritual things. So let me see if they got some information. Maybe I can glean through it. Sort of like reading a Jehovah's Witness pamphlet. Some of the stuff in there is right. So take some of that stuff and throw the vast majority of it out. You know, trying to glean, trying to come up. And he let me go through all of that and spend all that time and looking in libraries and doing all. And then he showed me a little something physical, easy. It's like that. At that point, I realized he doesn't say this, but if he said, when you pray, lay some pillows down in case you fall, but go in a corner and stand on your head and pray to me. And there's no such law like that, but if there was, you can't just say, well, that's stupid. Somebody could get hurt. And besides that, all the blood's going to rush to my head. And I might, what if I really want to have a long prayer? I'm going to have a headache. I might pass out. I might fall over. That's stupid. That's not what we should do. If it said that, we should, and if we need help, and some of us would need help, say, hey, can you help hold me so I don't fall? Stand on your head and start praying and say, please, hey, do you see this? I'm doing this, okay? I don't understand why you said to do this, but I'm doing it because I love you and because, but please, so that I can understand more about you, can you show me why you told me to do this? And it was a whole lot better than saying, that's stupid, God, I don't agree with that law, and my reasoning doesn't, you're going to have to, you got some explaining to do here because this don't make sense to me. Can you imagine? I don't want to imagine, but I can. If one of my kids would have come in, you know, and I said, this is not allowed. We will not be doing this. And one of the kids looks at me and says, that's stupid. That don't make no sense. I ain't going to do it. Unless you can really convince me how this is, that your reasoning is wiser than my reasoning, and here's a kid talking to you, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years old, say, I ain't going to do it. Unfortunately, I got too much of my dad in me, because I know what my dad would have done to me if I had ever told him something like that. I'd be opening my eyes and looking up, and I'd be on the ground, and I'd say, whoa, what happened? You know. But what? That's what we do with him. We're up here for a very important spiritual reason. He doesn't want our worship if there's something that we physically can deal with. Repent. Go and try and make it right. Something we've sinned against God. Go to him. Ask for the forgiveness. Think, well, we're in good shape. We got it all. Crack the book and start reading because you're going to find something. We all need some improvement on this. And then, the John 13:34, a new commandment I give to you, that you love one another as I have loved you. That you also love one another. By this you will know that you are my disciples if you have love for one another. I really want to appreciate, I do appreciate everybody that's here. And I'm glad that you're here, and I really wish some that aren't here were here. Because it's nothing more enjoyable for a feast day, a holy day, worshiping God, and doing it with others, that's what's in their heart. That's what they want. I don't want to go someplace where people are at each other's throats. I heard some of the stories, you know, Charlie Kimbrough told me, where he had to get in between ministers that want to physically duke it out, punch it out on Feast of Tabernacles and Holy Days, and has to intervene and get in the middle of all that. The ministers. I've been there when people are ready to have at it. We've had that happen more than once, but that's wrong. That's what our hearts should be. If we got our hearts like that, that's the first step. Now we can actually maybe learn something, do something, help someone else. I'm going to end with this, Psalm 119. Start in verse 97. Oh, how I love your law. It is my meditation all the day. Boy, do I fall short on that. Now, does that mean that's the only thing David thought about? Hey, he was the king. He had all kinds of stuff. There's no way. But what was the most important thing? Verse 98. You, through your commandments, make me wiser than my enemies, for they are ever with me. I have more understanding than all my teachers, for your testimonies are my meditation. He understood that his wisdom, everything he got, came from this. His heart was right, so now he could, and the closer, the more pure his heart was, the more he could understand why God said, do these things or don't do these things. How close it was. He knew more than his teachers. What was the reason? Because everything was centered around God. Verse 100. I understand more than the ancients because I keep your precepts. It's not enough just to try and observe, oh, I do the clean and the unclean and the holy days and the Sabbath. And that's a good start. I'm sorry, but it's like cutting down on beating your wife, you know. Step in the right direction, but it ain't going to cut it. Why did you say this, God? Why did you tell me to do this? What's the intent of the lawgiver? What am I supposed to learn from this? I have restrained my feet, 101, I have restrained my feet from every evil way that I may keep your word. If something comes between you and what God says, and let's face it, if it's going to come between it, whether it's a job or a possession or a friend or a family or whatever it is, if something comes between you and God, as painful as it is, who comes first? Make sure it's really a dividing thing between God. I've restrained my feet from every evil way that I may keep your word. So in other words, so that he can stay true, so that he can do what is right with God, so that he doesn't jeopardize that relationship. And when that is strong and that is pure, a lot of the other stuff that we worry about, it just kind of takes care of itself. It just falls back into place. I have not departed from your judgments. When people split hairs, they don't know the difference between a judgment, statute, commandment, precept. I have not departed from your judgments. The decisions off of the laws. For you yourself have taught me, how sweet are your words to my taste, sweeter than honey to my mouth. Through your precepts I get understanding. That's what I propose to you. You want to know the real understanding of why he says to do what he does? You got to go to the precepts. You got to say, what was his intent? Is there anything in there where we could learn? Or not this exact thing, is there something similar? Or, you know, sometimes you can almost see what God would say about a subject, because not everything today is in the Bible because it didn't exist, but what he would say about a subject from studying his precepts and the judgments and of all the other laws. Well, this is kind of similar to that. How did he say to do it in this? Look at the precepts. Get more understanding and closeness to them. Because that's the goal. For your verse 103. How sweet are your words to my taste, sweeter than honey to my mouth. Through your precepts I get understanding. Therefore I hate every false way. That's the standard. It's a really high bar. None of us will ever achieve it, but that's what we should be shooting for. That's what's the goal. So to prepare for Passover and unleavened bread and the rest of the time that we're up here, and then when we leave the rest of our lives, let's all purify ourselves through Jesus. I submit to you There are some things that each one of us knows already that we need some help with. So go to Him. Start there. But remember, we owe Him everything we got. Everything. What does it take? All your heart, all your mind, and all your soul. Thank you.